Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 3-4-2 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Nikias, a lot of news going on. I'm going to make sure we keep tabs on everything. It's time to hoop it up.
It is indeed time to hoop it up. We're going to hoop it up for real this time. We're going to have some fun. Let's get into some news items because, buddy, do we have a trade to discuss on this episode of the podcast. But first, on the WNBA front, continuing their offseason or continuing the theme of let's make Kalia Copper happy. Let's make sure we secure our franchise player. And then let's listen to her. Let's give her a voice. Let's empower her. Let's make sure that we keep the positivity high here. Jeff Pagliuca, hired as the new general manager to go along with new head coach Teresa Weatherspoon. Per the Sky release, Pagliuca returns to the Sky after spending the past four seasons assisting with player development and devising the head coach, that is James Wade, before he resigned earlier this year. Most recently, he spent the 2023 season as the Sky's director of skill development. Over 20 years of world-class player development and basketball training, Jeff started his own company, Evolution Athletics. And so he has the player development background, now going to step into the GM role. And again, this just seems to continue the theme of let's really build this boat around Kalia Copper. She seemed very pleased with the move, as she was apparently pleased with the move to trade for Marina Mabry, as she seems pretty ecstatic about the hiring of Teresa Weatherspoon. And now we hop into this offseason, impending free agency period, where there's some big names out there. And if you're Chicago, you want to try to remake this thing as quickly as possible. Again, they're not far removed from a championship, not far removed from a pretty deep playoff run. So I'm excited for them. Where are you at with this guy in their offseason so far?
Two thumbs up. You kept your star happy. You're moving towards the next direction of your team. And we'll see what comes from that.
We will see indeed. On the NBA front, the Grizzlies signing Bismack Biyombo. He was eligible to sign per Shams Charania via exemption after the fifth game of Ja Morant's suspension. So adding some big man depth there. Steve, how do you feel about the Biyombo fit in Memphis?
I think he's going to help them. Obviously, his rolling jumps off the page. We'll see how they use him when it comes to handoffs and if he's going to be a hub. The defense should be there. Grizzlies need some help in the big man room, so should be a plus.
Got you. The hub work is what I'm keeping an eye on specifically. As you mentioned, the rolling is going to be there. He is someone that can execute multiple coverages still defensively. So I think that impact should stand out for you, should help create some extra opportunities on the offensive glass. He has historically been a good offensive rebounder. I think Memphis needs more bites at the apple offensively with all the talent that they're missing. The hub work sticks out because Bismack isn't an elite passer. And I think you really miss Steven Adams' presence there. Obviously, you miss him as a screener and stuff as well. But the passing, his ability to pry Desmond Bane open and pry some of those other guards over, hasn't really been there. Bismack isn't that type of big, so I wonder how much of that he can replicate. But certainly needs some help in the big man room, so we will see how much of that help they get from Bismack. Quick Nets news, signing Keon Johnson to a two-way contract. Keon was part of the DeAndre Ayton trade earlier this offseason. Didn't end up making Phoenix's final roster as they were doing those cuts. Now finds a home in Brooklyn. Curious to see how much playing time he gets there. And Danny Green was waived as part of the James Harden trade, that we are about to dig into. But before we get into that portion, any teams that stick out to you as a Danny Green landing spot?
It's tough because the season's already started. I like the fit that Danny Green had with the Sixers. I thought it was nice to see his cutting, his defense kind of perk up. So I think he's one of those guys who would probably be closer towards like the buyout territory than anything else. Mm-hmm. But I would assume he can really help a contender or contender adjacent team. It's like my mind goes to Boston off the top of my head, even though they don't need him. He could help there. But that's probably the first one off my head. What say you?
Got you. I think beyond Boston, like I think you floated out Miami the other day. I'm just like, okay, that's interesting to add some wing depth, just to add another good vet in the locker room. We'll see what the vibes in Miami are like in a couple of weeks. Not the best start for them, but that's neither here nor there. He already was in Cleveland, so I don't think it's worth suggesting that again. Boston's interesting, though, especially since it feels like they took a lot of flyers on wings this offseason. And so if they just want someone, we know you will do this. And as they try to implement a little bit more movement into their offense, someone that can just make those random cuts, doesn't need the ball, even if it's just regular season value. Like, I could see where that would make some sense for them. How would you feel about Memphis, actually? Now that we talked a little bit about them.
Not this version.
Okay.
I think if they were all systems go, it'd probably make a lot more sense. But with where they're at right now, I think you just got to let your people kind of figure it out and move forward from there. I mean, is the bit just the Lakers?
That would be funny if you just came all the way back.
Is the bit just the Bucks?
They could probably use a little bit of help defensively, maybe. Those might be the two. Now that you mentioned them, wow, that's good stuff. So kudos to Danny Green. We will see where he lands and when he lands at the place that he lands at. James Harden has been traded to the Los Angeles Clippers, finally, after a whole bunch of noise this summer. And more noise heading into training camp. And then no noise, which also signified noise somehow as we got into preseason. It's done. It happened. He got what he wanted. James Harden is a Los Angeles Clipper, along with PJ Tucker. They also acquired Filip Petrušev in the deal, but they are trading him along with cash to the Sacramento Kings. I would imagine that's going to be for one of those second rounders. They're like top 55 protected or something. But Petrušev and cash gone to the Kings. So it's just James Harden and PJ Tucker for the Clippers. The Sixers getting Marcus Morris, Nicholas Batum, Robert Covington, KJ Martin, a 2026 first, which is the least favorable of OKC, the Clippers, and Houston's top four protected first, a 2028 unprotected first from the Clippers, a 2029 first round swap that is top three protected, a 2024 second, and a 2029 second. And then the Thunder naturally are getting a 2027 first round pick swap, which freed up that 2026 pick to be moved. Of course, the Thunder find a way to get in there. Steve, let's start with the Clippers. Let's start with James Harden. Obviously, PJ Tucker as well. We're going to start with Harden. How do you feel about the fit with Harden in LA?
I feel a lot of things. A lot of things. Been trying to process it. I was asleep when the trade went down. Woke up to it. Was discombobulated, but tried to put some thoughts together. Really locked in now. I do find it funny, before we dive in, that the Clippers need a point guard crowd has seen their answer be Russell Westbrook and James Harden. So there you go there. Pretty cool to see Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Russell Westbrook, and James Harden all being on the same team, all being in LA. That's fun. Clippers trying to make their move in the West. I understand some of the reaction is going to be the reaction. James Harden is firmly in that category where some folks have just placed him in one spot and that's it. That's all he is. No defense, too much ISO, no playoffs, bye. I don't like the way you move, whatever. I'm not doing that. I don't think people should do that. People got to remember, right? Mekhi's last year, only three players averaged 20 points and 10 assists. You know those three are, right? Tyrese Haliburton, Trae Young, and James Harden. This year, there are two players averaging 20 points and 10 assists. You know those two players are?
Tyrese Haliburton is one of them.
And Trae Young is the other. So it's not like there's a whole bunch of people that were doing stuff that James Harden was doing. I think context is important in basketball. And I think one thing people got to think about, he picked this spot. He wanted to come to the Clippers. We got to think about that a little bit. He's going to make them better offensively. The number one thing that jumps off the page is his ability to make plays to create offense for the Clippers. Clippers are 16th in assists this year. About 25.4 a game. They were 24th last year, about 23.9 a game. 16th in 21-22 with 24. 56.2% of their made field goals are assisted, according to the NBA's tracking data. That puts them at 24th in the league. Last year, 58.1% of their made field goals were assisted. That put them at 21st. He's going to help them. We can clear the way and think about that. Let's just go there. I do think this is a good context for him offensively. He has Kawhi Leonard. He has Paul George. He has Russell Westbrook. On the nights where James Harden has it going, he can still do James Harden things. He's going to elevate. On the nights when he doesn't, those guys can also continue to just do their thing, and he can work to find it. I think he's been searching for a scenario where I can elevate a team, but I don't necessarily have to put everything into my car on this day. I can leave some stuff at the crib. And I think one of the things that people have to think about, he's worked to shift his game as, you know, time has gone on. I think that goes under the radar. We see him initiate more contact on drives. We see him look to engage the defense more in pick and roll and then make a quick decision. Him and Joel Embiid had great rapport in pick and roll because James Harden was like, I'm taking one or two dribbles. This is a drop. Here's your pocket pass. And we're just going to do that over and over again. But then he added the mid-range pull-up. And he added the mid-range step back. And then you saw more post-ups. So there's things you can do. The Clippers are going to have to build this thing out offensively. And that's going to be the key. But before we get into that, I will toss to your thoughts on James Harden's fit with the Clippers.
I think for me, like, that is a lot of talent to add to the room. That is a much-needed playmaker to add to the room. And so on the surface, like, I like it quite a bit. And to your point about James Harden picking this spot, we will see how it goes. I think James Harden's slated to make his debut Monday, I think is what Sham said. So we have some days for them to get some practices in, et cetera, and then we're going to have the whole regular season moving forward. But the fact that he has picked this spot should alleviate at least some of the early concerns about, okay, how much will he adjust to being off the ball? How willing will he be to just adjust, period? I think if he's choosing this spot, you know, to bounce off of your point, he wants to play off of guys. He doesn't want to have to carry the boat. There may be more of a willingness to do some of the quote-unquote dirty work. Just because he's finally in the spot that he wants to be in and also in the context that he wants to be in. So we may see more of that. And ultimately, this is also just, you know, the noise is a noise, and I disagree with a lot of it, but the noise is out there. This is kind of a prove-it situation for James Harden as well. I don't think it should be. I think he's very good. I think he does have his shortcomings. I think we should all be able to talk about those things with nuance, but landscape's the landscape. But he is a free agent this summer. He's now in the spot that he wants to be in. The postseason did end the way that it ended for him. There's an element to, I'm going to show y'all that I can do this, that may kick in with James Harden, that can make it even more likely that this ends up being a successful partnership. I guess we'll get into the questions in a little bit, but like, I do like the fit defensively. Is this the best collection of wing defenders that he's been around since like the early Houston days? Kind of has to be, doesn't it?
I would vote yes.
Like, you got, even at this stage, like, Kawhi is still a very good perimeter defender. Paul George, obviously a very good perimeter defender. And this Houston group switches quite a bit, 1-4, as most teams are training to switch a little bit more, 1-4 specifically. But the Clippers in particular switch a ton, 1-4. I think with all the shortcomings that you can list for James Harden defensively, if there is a coverage that he's most comfortable with, it is switching. And with his level of strength, he is someone that can defend up in a way that most guys his size cannot. And so I'm actually pretty cool with the defensive context for him as well. I like it. Now, I do have some fit questions that, again, they'll just be solved as the games actually happen. Like, I think about some of the conversations that we've had about Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown with Kawhi and Paul George. And so my eyes kind of go to, okay, how exactly are James Harden and Kawhi going to be used together? How are James Harden and Paul George going to be used together? Do we see any kind of, like, ball screens between those two? With James Harden as a screener, will we see him setting off ball screens? Like, what does that look like? And how does the defense react to that kind of thing? And if Paul George is cooking, or if Kawhi Leonard is cooking, and James Harden is one pass away, what does that really mean? Because in theory, that should be a very good thing to have a playmaker and a shooter like James Harden one pass away from your star. You can't help as much. But with James Harden being a good, but not necessarily a willing catch and shoot guy throughout the latter stages of his career, like, how much of that will he tap into? Like, those are some early questions that I have with the Harden partnership. And with James Harden and these bigs, I feel pretty good about what Harden and Mason Plumlee will do together in pick and roll. Him and Zubats, I kind of want to see what that looks like. Because it feels like, in terms of like the rolling cadence, hit the dude, it's not a very quick roll to the basket for Zubats. He's not the kind of mid, like, very dull analysis here, but he's not the kind of mid-range presence that Joel Embiid is. So, like, I kind of want to see what the early returns of that ball screen is going to look like as we look at more of the, like, 1-5 or 2-5, wherever James is, those pick and rolls. So those are the early questions that I have. But overall, I think he can slide in. I think he makes this team better. And I think he has the ability to solve some of the questions that have plagued L.A. in the playoffs.
Well, let's break some of that down before we go larger offensively. To your defense context, I think you nailed most of it. I think having the help defenders is going to help him. I think being able to maybe be on non-shooter X and him be able to help and float is going to be big. The switching you nailed. We could talk about the concern with teams switching them. And I get it. If you're the Clippers, you don't want to bog down completely into ISOs, but that's been something we've been talking about for a couple years now with them. There are still matchups that I think James Harden can attack. And there are still guys that teams just don't want to have him one-on-one against, purely. I think there's one thing we've seen in the playoffs with Harden teams. If the Clippers tap into it, who knows? But where, okay, you're switching. Let's switch this person onto James Harden first, right? Just a little false action. You may want that person to guard James Harden. But now if we bring Kawhi as a screener, do you want that person to also guard Kawhi?
Yeah.
Does that now become a switch? Or now are you like, whoa, let's put two on the ball real quick. Let's see what's going on. Does that now open up Kawhi and Paul George as screeners again? It's a very finite possibility, but something that could happen. Also, if we're looking in theory with their smaller lineups, you can assume Russell Westbrook will be out there. And you can probably assume that PJ Tucker will be out there. Or worst case scenario, Norman Powell's out there. You could use them as screeners for James Harden or for Kawhi or for Paul George. Defensively, you're going to have to spread your capital out in a different way. Mm-hmm. Because if your best defender is on Kawhi, right? Your second best defender is on Paul George. One of your smaller people has to guard Russ, assuming. So who's guarding James? And so can you flip things that way to where now we can kind of manipulate and get to certain things we want that we maybe couldn't have gotten to before? To the pick and roll point, I think we did see some rejuvenation for Zubac, at least at first when Westbrook showed up. As far as, oh, wow, this is a person that can get downhill and pick and roll.
He can do that.
So now do we see Mace screen and roll a little harder, throw some slips in there? Do we see Zubac screen a little harder, be able to know, okay, I might get a catch on the short roll? Does that initiate things? Then you gotta think about if James Harden is in pick and roll and they're able to force some help somehow, whether it's a short roll catch or people holding on Harden, look at who the kickouts are to. And that's something that the Clippers haven't necessarily had. So I understand that. To your one pass away point, it's a luxury of sorts. I don't think the catch and shoot numbers tell the whole story, but they do tell a story. My thing is, if you can have an action or you have Kawhi Leonard cooking, Paul George cooking, and hey, let's say it's James one pass away, the Paul or Kawhi two passes away. Even if it's not a catch and shoot, if he makes a quick decision, you have James Harden attacking a rotating defense, and now he can play out of that, I think that could be a positive for the Clippers. The main thing for me with the Clippers is it is going to take time. And how the Clippers build things out offensively is going to be interesting. I go back to kind of how Paul George and Kawhi have been evolving movement-wise. We've seen the Clippers tap into using them off staggers and trying to get them off more handoffs. I think Harden helps them because, in theory, if you look at the Clippers' base, Kawhi and Paul George, when they're available, have had to be, what, the scorers, the movement shooters, the post-up threats, the elbow ISO guys, the pick-and-roll guys.
And the playmakers.
And the playmakers. And guess what? You have to do enough scoring to get the defense to either send more help or put two on the ball. And then once you do that, you got to make those plays. So philosophically, oh, hey, he could do some of that. So now we could do a little bit more of this. And then, you know, we can put it all together. So I think they have an opportunity to keep pressure on defenses and make quick decisions. For me, I go back to Brooklyn, the early Brooklyn days, where it was like, oh, wow, they can run this one action, and then it flows into just a kick to James Harden, and he drives, and, oh, this is different. Do the Clippers hit those notes? I'm not sure.
Got you. I think the other big question that I have, which again, we just have to see it. I guess, how often do the Clippers want to go small? I guess is my question. And I think Ty Lue talked a little bit about it. I'm saying they kind of want to go a little bit bigger. They want to use their centers more, which I think makes sense for them. But I think with the small ball configurations, in a perfect world where you can have those four with, if it's Norman Powell, if it's PJ Tucker, whatever the case may be, I think if it is Russ or Tucker, or is Russ and Tucker, at least I have like my playoff hat on, you still have the ability to have a big on the floor if you're a defense, and you can put that big on PJ or put that big on Russ and say, all right, hit enough shots to make us care or to make us tip our cap if y'all hit those threes or whatever the case may be. And then with that, I worry about the rebounding slash just general possession edge that the Clippers may have. Like, will they take enough threes and make enough threes? Like, independent of, like, will Russ hit them or PJ hit them? Will they take and make enough threes to where they can win the math? Because I don't know if they win in terms of, like, offensive rebounding and stuff like that. And we saw elements of that as we record on a Thursday afternoon. We saw elements of that last night when they went smaller. And Anthony Davis was able to get board after board. Christian Wood was able to get some crucial boards. So, like, can they gain rebound enough to make those small ball units worth it? And if not, you know, was Zubac hit enough free throws? Will Mason Plumlee continue to knock down free throws after we saw the hand switch last year? If he's closing out games for them? And, like, just in general, how much space can you muck up if those guys are on the floor? Like, those are some questions that I have. So the lineup configurations are going to be fun. And as Ty Lue kind of hinted at, you know, someone asked him, what is it going to take for this to work? He mentioned sacrifice. Do we get to a point to where it is James or Russ closing a game? Or is James or, you know, or is Russ or PJ? Like, is that where some of the sacrifice is going to come in? And if so, how does that get dealt with? Is that fair or?
Well, it's interesting. I do think that they do have a vacuum where if you didn't need to, you could close without James Harden. I don't know if we ever get to that world. I think it could be matchup dependent on their small lineups to where, hey, it might be a PJ night. It might be a Russ night. It might be a Norm Powell night. But I think they kind of have options to a degree. Because one of my first reactions when I saw the trade was, woo. It does feel like y'all cashed in a lot of your small ball defensive wing type lineups for this. Mm-hmm. But then I kind of thought about it. If you look at the nine players the Clippers played against Utah earlier this season, only Batum and Covington were really in the rotation. And they got PJ back. Now, I love the Martin fit for the Clippers. I thought he could really help them. But yes, you probably have less options to go with small ball wise, but you have some pretty good ones. Like, you probably raised the ceiling with some of them. Quiet as kept, there was a little bit of redundancy, which didn't help anyone to a degree. Like, okay, I trust Nick Batum. We need this. He's going to do this. Oh, we need baskets. Marcus Morris, please come here. Even though he was out of the rotation. That was a common theme. Hey, Robert Covington, you're pretty good. Come on out. But the problem is, what triggers which person to go in at what time? That was always something we talked about as far as how do you know when to go with whom? Mm-hmm. So I think having PJ really helps ease that. We saw even against the Lakers, what the Clippers rolled out, Kawhi, Paul George, Russell Westbrook, Norm Powell, and Bones Highland. Size is going to be a question there. But if, in theory, James Harden can guard bigger players, Kawhi and PG have a certain versatility, you probably move your way around it. It's just more, what are we going to run? Who's going to be the screener? And do we have enough defense? Mm-hmm. I think it's going to toggle probably between PJ and Russ, depending on the night. My biggest question, honestly, less about sacrifice and building the offense, can you now just keep Russ in the place that he's been at? Which I think you can. They've played together. They know how to do it. He's been playing well to start the season. You don't want to lose what he's found with the Clippers. But I think the fact that he's found it is going to help everyone in this context. I think it'd be different if Russ was searching like he was with the Lakers and hey, we just added James Harden. I think there's enough familiarity to where we can just add this to what we're doing and boost everyone up. And plus, with staggering, yes, there's going to be sacrifice, but here's a little slice of the pie for you. Mm-hmm. Hey, Russ, go out there and go crazy with the second unit. And not to mention, they kept Terrence Mann. They kept Bones Highland. They kept Norman Powell. So, hey, any one of y'all that feel the type of way, here you go. Here's a little extra 5 minutes with them.
Here's a little movie, yeah. So, like, that's going to be some of the fun. It's another question I have, but this is more in the fun division. Like, just how are they going to stagger this? Like, what are going to be, if you are Ty Lue and say, okay, cool, I'm walking into this, barring injury or foul trouble, I want to have two of these guys on the floor at all time. That is a luxury that a lot of teams just don't have with that kind of talent, first and foremost. What are going to be the pairings? Is it going to be like Russ and Kawhi, Harden and PG? Russ and PG, Kawhi and Harden? Like, I wonder, like, what Ty Lue wants to do there. Where would you go with that kind of, like, how would you stagger those four?
How would I stagger? I mean, you could do whatever you wanted to, honestly. It's choose your own adventure at that point. And then whoever you want to pull from the first unit, you can now give them the second unit. So if you want to pull Kawhi earlier and let him go with them, probably I might not go that way. I might go PG with the second unit. Or if James Harden needs a little bit of extra time or extra room to do some more stuff, you get an early sub, you come back with the second unit, and y'all just kind of run. You can initiate action. You got Mace rolling. They can still play out of it. You can get the quick decisions. There are things you can do. I was trying to go down a rabbit hole, because I'm sure I will go down that rabbit hole as far as their substitution pattern, because I did it last year when they made the trade. Mm-hmm. But it looks like Norman Powell probably going to be the first sub. You'd assume that might be for Russ, right? At least pattern-wise, that's what it's been. You bring Mace in for a big, that's fine. You bring PJ in for Kawhi, you let Paul George play the longest, and then it's who do you bring back first?
Question for you. I'm glad you said it, because that just sparked the question that I had watching the game last night. How do we feel about PJ at the four? This is more of just a general Clippers question, more so than like how he fits with Harden or anything like that. But how do you feel about PJ alongside a big?
I like it because of the context, because of who he can defend and who he could be playing with that quote-unquote second unit. If it's going to be Bones and Norman Powell at the same time, obviously Terrence Mann will help once he returns, but you will need someone to have some switchability, be able to guard some size, anchor your defense in a type of way. So I don't mind it as much from that sense. I feel like you may feel differently, so I'm interested to hear what you may have to say.
It's just the general spacing question that I have with having PJ at the four alongside a big that also doesn't space the floor. And I think that kind of, I don't want to say pigeonholes, because you still have a lot of perimeter talent, but you have to maximize the space. Like, you can't, I don't think you can play those two plus like Terrence Mann, who I think is a better shooter than PJ, a better shooter than Zubats, obviously, or a better shooter than Mason Plumlee. But the way that teams guard him and guard them are all pretty similar. So I just kind of worry about some of the spacing context if you have PJ at the four. But also, if you're only using him at a five, how much playing time are you giving him? And I think he, you know, to your point, like, he is going to be important to their smaller groups when they go that way. Because you don't want, as fun as it was to see Kawhi sprinkled in at the five, like, I don't think you want to run a bunch of Kawhi at the five, at least during the regular season. But I do have some questions with, like, PJ and Zubats on the floor together, or PJ and Plumlee on the floor together offensively.
Wow, you just put him in the corner.
Yeah, but like, that help is coming, which isn't necessarily new, but again, like, it's, I don't know, just, it's something that I'm thinking about.
It's been the PJ Tucker story for how many years now?
Correct, but like, that's also part of the thing though, no?
Hey, I'm just saying, some of these teams have figured out how to make it work. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And the Clippers may very well do the same. I'm just, again, that's just me.
You just out on PJ.
I don't think I'm out on PJ.
Well, no, I've been listening the last 2 years. Ever since he left Miami, it's been a different tune with PJ.
I mean, I will stand on that. Like, I didn't love the Philly fit. And by the end, it didn't look like they did either. That part is true. I'll stand on that. But I'm not out on PJ as a concept. Like, I do still think he's a productive role player. He has obvious use here. It's just, how many of the minutes can you maximize? when he's on the floor, what the lineup combinations look like.
Well, here, I'll throw you a curveball. What if PJ's usage looks a little different? And he's back to being a screener, and he's back to doing some handoffs. Does that change the math for you at all?
That would make me feel a little bit better, yeah. Okay. I just worry about insert perimeter player Cook, Zubats in dunker spot, PJ Tucker in corner. Have fun against this geared up defense. Like, I don't love the thought of that. As we've talked about, like, a little bit of stagnancy with the Clippers half court offense in pockets. Like, I don't want them to run into that issue, if that makes sense. But that's where I am there. Any closing Clipper thoughts?
Well, I mean,
because we do have another team in this deal.
I think that's most of my Clipper thoughts to a degree. It's my mind goes to the Western Conference and just how much talent there is and how many feelings are going to get hurt this year. Like, think about the journeys we have going simultaneously. KD, Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal just got back together, or just put this thing together, right? Chris Paul just got to Golden State. Now James Harden just got to the Clippers. That ignores the defending champions, and it ignores LeBron James and Anthony Davis and Luka and them. And we just go down the line. It's going to be wild to see how this works out.
Also, this is very much way less important, but what a year to go back to the East versus West format for the All-Star game with all this movement. That's just fun. That's going to be, can't wait till those early voting results come out and we have insert fan favorite here getting more votes than All-Star here. But, you know, we'll save the rant for when it comes and get preemptively annoyed.
Very cool. It's coming. So go ahead, folks. As soon as the NBA puts that information out, put a calendar reminder in for that Tuesday after or whenever. Nikias is not going to be happy. I can already tell you that right now.
It's a tale as old as time. Anyway, on the Sixers front, again, Marcus Morris, Nicholas Batum, Robert Covington, KJ Martin, quite a few picks coming into this one. How do we feel about the return for Philadelphia?
It depends on what context you're looking at it in. I could see if someone says, that's all you got for James Harden, and y'all went through X amount of years of this, and this is your return, diminishing every time. That's a bigger picture type deal. Mm-hmm. The main thing is you're moving forward. You don't have to deal with this anymore. And you did get some dogs. Like, I know a lot of this season, the talk has been about Tyrese Maxey, but they've gotten some defensive buy-in from their guys. And now you add Nick Batum, you add Robert Covington. These guys can knock down shots. They're used to this role. Heck, I mean, it's a Robert Covington comeback story. Those guys can knock down, you know, everything they need to. If you're getting those two and Patrick Beverley off the bench, I'm intrigued defensively. You have a lot more size and length to your team, which should help to insulate Tyrese Maxey to a degree defensively. Mm-hmm. And you have some lineup versatility now. You know, I like the Kelly Oubre move because, hey, you probably need some more wings. If you have Batum and Covington, hey, we've got options. We can kind of mix and match and do different things and feel better about ourselves defensively while maintaining what we want to do offensively with our movement and flow. I am curious to see how the Sixers figure out the rotation. Less who plays and more who plays with who. When does certain people come in? What is the thought process behind, okay, we need defense, we're going here. Hey, we need shooting, we're going here. Those type of things. I also find it a little funny, just a smidge, that Nick Nurse went from the Raptors with all of those wings and goes to Philly. And surprise, let's bring in all these 6'7 and 6'9 dudes. We ordered your wings. It's your favorite.
We ordered your wings. So great shot. But here are all these 6'7 to 6'9 dudes. And then also KJ Martin, who is more comfortable just playing the four or the five than actually being a wing. So, like, that's a lot of fun. I think for me, if you're Philadelphia, like, you accomplished your goal. You got first round picks, swaps, you got some seconds. And all the players that you acquired either have utility now or are expiring. Like, they're all expiring deals. So if you are to believe Daryl Morey, who's been pretty excited about, we are good, we have a superstar, we have a budding star, and we're also going to be the only, like, quote-unquote good team next offseason that's going to have a max slot available. That's a pretty fruitful place to be in, depending on what that cast ends up being. Like, a lot of those free agents, like Kawhi can hit the market, James Harden hit the market, Paul George hit the market. Like, ideally, those guys should stay in LA. Otherwise, why are you making this move? They can't be major players. So you maintain your flexibility while also adding some short-term help. Like you mentioned earlier, like, Robert Covington has been playing to start the season, which is a bit of a shift from what we saw last year, as they were trying to sort out what the front court rotation was. But Robert Covington can knock down shots, can still roam around as a help defender, can play some small ball five for you with some of those hybrid second units. I think, in just kind of zooming out with all these guys that you add, like, Batum has played some five for the Clippers. Robert Covington has played some five throughout his career. KJ Martin, again, if you want to get super small, you got to go to the Houston days. Like, he has played the four and the five. It's funny that Philly just kind of didn't have a it's weird to say, like, a traditional small ball lineup, but, like, they didn't have a ton of small ball options. It was really just Embiid and then, hey, PJ, play the five. And that was just kind of what it was in terms of what Doc Rivers trusted. Now you can go Covington at the five if you want. You can go Batum at the five if you want. If you want to dust off Marcus Morris and say, go cook against this bad second unit, you go Marcus Morris at the five if you want. I have no idea how much playing time he's going to get, but that option exists. KJ Martin, if you want to go smaller. And I think the general trend of just getting more guys that are willing to run with Tyrese Maxey, I think, helps. You don't think of Robert Covington as a speedster, but you look throughout his career, the way he's trailing and flowing into transition threes, that's something he's comfortable doing if it's Tyrese Maxey plus the second unit. If it's Maxey, Melton, Oubre, KJ Martin, and Robert Covington, all of those dudes are fine with running in transition. Tyrese Maxey doesn't have to wait. Now, from there, it's just like, okay, who's the screening partner? Like, that's probably KJ Martin, which that could be a pretty fun pick and roll pairing with a second unit led by Tyrese Maxey. They can do some fun things with that. And just adding that level of versatility and just giving a little bit more optionality between, like, you know, three through five for Philly, I think is a positive. And again, you zoom out. If it doesn't work, I think Bobby Marks tweeted out after January 1st, a lot of these contracts can be aggregated again. So if they want to make a move at the deadline, that's something they can do. And if they don't make a move and they're fine with what they have in the room, all these contracts can come off the books once the offseason hits. So I think Philly accomplished what they want. Now, to your point about the other context, on its face, those guys for James Harden, who very well just could have made an All-NBA team last year and just flat out should have made the All-Star team last year, yeah, that can feel underwhelming. You add in the context of what this summer was for Philadelphia, and you were able to get some helpful short-term pieces, longer-term, if you want to keep KJ Martin, really small cap hold. So even as you're trying to keep max slot or two available, you can just keep his cap hold and then sign him later if you land a big guy. So, like, he can just be a player for you moving forward. Like, you can go either way with this. So, and you got the picks that you can package now or later. So I think, zooming out, like, Philadelphia made out well with the context that they were in. You have to ding them because some of this context, if not a lot of this context, was created by them. So it can't be the A+. But I think they made out fine.
I am interested, just to bring it back to Tyrese Maxey real quick. I do feel like, and he's been incredible to start the season. I want to make sure I say that right away.
Him and Joel averaging over 30 this year, which is fun.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of helps make a, we can do that. You know what? We can do that. That's fine. It's interesting to see. I feel like a lot of the takes about Tyrese Maxey that I saw playoff time, I'm not necessarily seeing right now. Obviously, he's playing at a very high level, but I'm interested to see how it now looks like. You've got a clear runway for him. That is fantastic. That's what you want. You're going to get the answer to how good is he? Is the ceiling even higher than we thought, or is it just kind of going to be this? And now, how does he evolve in this context? Because I do think it is set up for him. He's more decisive this year. He's been more aggressive. We're seeing him get to the line more at times. The playmaking's been there. He's got two games of seven assists or more. How does it look when now he's got to carry some more of that to where, hey, we now need you to make these plays as opposed to go be great? No, we kind of need you to, like, bend the defense and make these reads. What's it look like when opposing defenses are like, you know what, Tyrese? Go ahead and cook. We're just going to stay in a drop. How does he adjust to that come playoff time? What's it like when teams try and put him in action more and more? Because, hey, you're doing a lot over here. deal with this 6-7 person real quick, and let's see how it goes. So now it's less, is Tyrese Maxey good? It's more, how does he adjust to this scope? Because if the game plan last year was, we got to worry about Joel Embiid, we got to worry about James Harden, and we don't want to let Tyrese get going, if the coaches sit down in that meeting and be like, hey, no Embiid, no Maxey, how does that shift?
Yeah, and I would imagine for some game plans, like it's similar to Denver, where it's like we all know that Jokic is the best player on that team. But a few, I imagine a few game plans where, hey, if we take Jamal Murray off the table first, Jokic is going to do what he does. But let's make sure Murray doesn't get going, and we'll have a better chance to win this game. Do we see some of that with Maxey, where it's like, okay, Joel's going to do what he's going to do. Let's make sure, like, you know, you mentioned, what if we just stay in a drop and see if he can bend it? What if it's just, nah, we're just going to trap Tyrese Maxey every time he touches it. Let's see how good of a decision maker this dude really is. And let's see what these other dudes can do. Like, how does he adjust to that? I think zooming out, though, that's what's been so fun about the Maxey start for me. As you can kind of see the game-to-game improvement for him, like, we know he's fast. We know he can pull up. We know he's fun in transition. We know he can get downhill. It's important to me that the chemistry between him and Joel Embiid is being sorted out on a game-by-game basis. And you can see a little bit more, okay, he's hitting Joel where he wants to hit him. It's getting better as the season goes on. Oh, we know he's getting downhill. Oh, he's getting to the free throw line more. He's starting to get some of these tricks and getting some easier points for himself. It's encouraging to see that in addition to these gaudy, holy crap, he's averaging 30 points type beats. So as those adjustments come, like, I feel better about him being able to figure that out.
No, I was going to say, if Tyrese Maxey's scoring now leads to defenses putting two on the ball and he becomes a better playmaker, I am taking a victory lap on both you and JJ Redick.
Well, I tell you what, if he sets the career high in skip passes this year, hey, you got a fan in me.
Thank you.
You did it. All right, we're going to shift to the mailbag. So very quickly, thank you to those who sent in questions. As always, if you have random basketball questions, you don't have to wait for a prompt or a special mailbag episode. Just email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. That is dunkerspot@yahoo.com. Send them in. We will get to them as we can. We'll start with a couple of Harden-based mailbag questions, and then we'll get into some general basketball stuff. First one going to come from Tendall, who says, hello, Nikias and Steve. First off, I do want to thank both of you for all that you do for the community. You both are great at giving high-level basketball analysis for both the NBA and the W in a way that is approachable and entertaining. Thank you. So, I know that people feel a certain type of way about James Harden, and I know that in 2023, everybody has to get their jokes off. But do people legitimately think Harden isn't a quality player? He's definitely past his prime, but he just averaged 21-10 in back-to-back seasons for Philly and kind of won them two games against Boston last year. There are plenty of legitimate questions you could raise about this new-look Clippers team, but I'm just curious as to why having a 21-10 guy as a third option would be considered a bad thing.
Dang, that's darn near my intro. I could have just saved it. I truly think people have just made a decision about James Harden. Based on whatever it is, the YouTube defensive edit, the hashtag scary hours or fun times or the way he moves teams or the playoff struggles. And that's just the bit for some people. He feels like, and I feel like I've asked you this before, he feels like he's in the Dirk spot for this generation, where I think the only thing that changes how he's viewed while he's playing is a championship. I think everything changes once he's done, which I think is unfortunate, but I think it's just the way it is. You just look at the reaction. It's rinse and repeat a lot of the same takes. That's no disrespect. I'm just telling you what I saw.
I got you.
Like, a lot of takes talking about the playoffs, right?
Mm-hmm.
It didn't end well. I can't tell you it ended well. Man had two 40-point games in that stretch to give him a shot to really put it away. I don't know if it's they don't like the way he moves. I don't know if it's they don't like the scenarios. He's just not going to get the benefit of the doubt from folks. Mm-hmm. There's very rarely that people, and everyone has someone like this in their life or have at some point where, all right, man, I don't want to see your point of view right now.
Just prove me wrong.
But if you look back at it, and history will look back, if you look at the scenarios Harden opted out of, there'll be a he might have had a point at some point.
Heartbreaking. The worst person you know. Oh, goodness. But yeah, like, I feel like, honestly, it's just a general commentary on, like, how we talk about basketball. Not me and you, but, like, communal, we talk about basketball, as where at the peak of the Houston era for James Harden, I think sides were just chosen. As he was putting together these 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s with the heavy ISO style in combination with Daryl Morey building out that Houston team to, we are going to take threes, no middies, we're going to be switchable, et cetera. It felt like a lot of people were, this is where basketball is going, this is basketball with genius at work, et cetera, or this ain't how it's supposed to be played, it's never going to win like that. And so much of the conversation about James Harden has been framed from those two extremes where, like most things, the answer is somewhere in the middle. There are some adjustments that James could make to his play style. There are some elements of his games that he could tap into in playoff time that can make things easier. There are ways to build a team that on the margins that could help accentuate what James Harden does well, et cetera. Also, math is math. You can push your offense to be more efficient if you shift more of your shot profile, whatever, whatever. There's nuance. And for lots of people, it was just Daryl Morey, James Harden, y'all got it. Get on board or you are a dinosaur or these nerds, et cetera. And so as we've gotten later into James Harden's career, and he hasn't won, he's had, again, even last postseason, he had the 40-point games where he's cooking, and he also had the duds where he couldn't get into double digits. It just leads to the extremes, either victory lapping or, hey, what happened to this? I thought you said da-da-da-da-da. And, like, it's not a healthy way to go about these conversations. Like, independent of James Harden, it's not a healthy way to go about these conversations. But I think that's where it's come to. And so now it is to the question. This is a dude that averaged 21-11 last year. And it's like, well, shoot, man, I don't know what the Clippers are thinking. They're thinking about adding a guy that averaged 21-11. The whole good efficiency. That's what they're thinking about and making life easier for their guys. Now, again, that doesn't mean it's a perfect signing or the perfect trade. We just spent 25-30 minutes on different questions that we have. It's not hand in glove, but it feels like just the nuance with Harden is lost, like the nuance with a lot of players have been lost. And to your point, yeah, I think it's just going to be better whenever he retires, whether he wins a ring or not, because we're going to be further away from like the heat of the moment arguments and stuff that we tap into. We're going to zoom out and say, oh, snap, this many career points, this many career assists, this many All-NBAs, MVP. And if it is a ring with the Clippers, you add that to the resume as well. Like, this is a surefire first ballot Hall of Famer that we were just like, is he good? And, like, we just did this with Russell Westbrook, did we not? And, like, it's just odd. It shouldn't be this hard to talk about the different contexts that players are in or that they help shape based on their strengths or weaknesses. It shouldn't be that difficult to just say that before it turns to a referendum on how you feel about basketball, TM. But that's what it is. Also, we got a PS. As a silly free throw question, does Dakai self-censor himself when listening to music in his car, or does he just listen to the radio edits? That's a tremendous shot. Mostly listening to gospel in my car, so I don't have to self-censor. But for me, if I am listening to something else and there are some words, like, it's very much just a quick pause for me, so I don't say it. It's not hard to do. Like, I don't have to listen to the radio edits. Like, I'm not scared of curse words. I just don't say them.
Okay. Do you like mix in your own like fake curse words? Like, do you go like fudge or like bull jive?
It's more of the latter, toss in a good darn every now and then. It's all good.
But now I'm picturing you trying to get hyped on the way to get a haircut and you just, yeah, yeah. Anyways.
Oh man. A lot of life experience with these things, so it's fine. It comes natural to me. It's all good. Next one's going to come from Drew. This is, in a sense, a two-parter. Do you think the Clippers should have a finger already hovering over the eject button in case the James Harden thing doesn't work out this year? As a Clippers fan, if the situation looks to be even a little untenable, I don't think the potential return on investment is high enough to offset the risk of being in the tank for the next however many years because of the assets they committed to acquire Harden and Paul George. I hope this turns into a discussion on your general philosophies on when a team should, for lack of a better phrasing, blow it up. I've always been very quick to jump to that point and think that many teams have been burned by being too slow on the draw, but can also acknowledge that it's easy for me to say when it's not my job on the line and I'm not in the building with the players. Appreciate it. Big fan of the show.
Thanks, Drew. I like this one. It's a fair point, and I'm going to use the word pivot, just FYI, just out of respect. I think the toughest part about pivoting is you have to know what you have to a degree. And yes, I'm taking your advice, Drew. I'm winding it out, so just stick with me. It's risky. We've seen teams maybe overachieve a little bit and believe that they what they had was really going to take them to where they wanted to go. And then they find out it's not, and they're forced to pivot. And we've seen teams who have these really great years, and they've built something. It's really good. You run into a tough matchup, or you run into that one team that you can't beat. And now you're retooling your team around that team. Like, all right, now we need to make sure we are ready for them. And then you know what happens? You don't see them again. You see the next team that's trying to chase for a spot. And where did y'all come from? Enough. And now you got to pivot. We've seen, of course, the teams that hold on just a little too long. Just a little too long. We've had success. We're doing good things. We're so close. Oh my gosh, we're not. We got to go somewhere else. To bring it back to the Clippers, I think they're all in. I do not think that Ballmer has any interest in doing anything other than winning a championship and probably opening up that arena. That's probably like 1A, 1B, picture order. But, you know, to open up that new arena in that city, we need to have people. We need to have players. We need to have winning. We got to go for it. We got to go for it now. Because he's looking at this Western Conference, and the Clippers are looking at this Western Conference. Denver's very good. Everyone is trying to do stuff. While we have this that, yes, we are tough in the playoffs. We have PG and Kawhi. We need to maximize this time period right now. Because mm-hmm. we're not going to get it back. So I think they're just ultimately in the all-in category. They're just all in. And waiting to pivot and swing for the fences whenever they have to. But to your question, Drew, like I look at Denver. For example, they only had a short stretch of what the core four, Jokic, Murray, Gordon, Michael Porter Jr. And they had to trust that that core was good enough. And they found the pieces that fit around it. And it worked. Milwaukee, hey, it looked like Giannis and Middleton were done. Oh, look, here's Drew Holiday. It worked. People been talking about Tatum and Brown for how many years now in a row? They done scored 109,000 points in every game I've seen them play this year. You just, it's kind of one of those things. You can't skip steps. But to not skip steps, you kind of got to go through the ups. You got to go through the downs. You got to ride the wave.
Got to ride the wave. I think for me, like, I'm kind of with, I think Drew and I are aligned to where I'm quicker to say, hey, this probably ain't going to go the way that you think it's going to go.
Shocker.
Hey, man. I need to email Drew, but like, hey, how old are you? Is this just an age thing? Is this what this is? We, you know, us of the microwave society, et cetera. We want it now or else type beat. But like, just to kind of bounce off your point, like there is obvious value in believing in the sample that you have and going through ups and downs. Because I think there is just an element of adversity that you got to go through with any group. Now, some get it together and pop earlier than others. Some have, like, again, like the Denver portion. With Jamal and Jokic. You know, you have the injury stuff sprinkled in. You really just got to trust and believe. You kind of have to read where you are and be honest about where you are and also be honest about what the landscape is. And so that's where with Denver, it was probably, not that it was easy, but it was probably easier to hold serve for a year as Jamal Murray gets back, et cetera, knowing, okay, we got an MVP. And we know he's unstoppable when he's on the floor. And we know what these two can do. And then we added these other two. You mentioned again, Michael Porter Jr. and Aaron Gordon. Oh, it looked like this. This sample might be small, but the sample that we have with the core two, with Murray and Jokic, we know what it can be. And so we can trust in this. We go to, you know, we'll lean into the bit for the purposes of the question. We look at Chicago that had the hot stretch and it was objectively good. But like also, okay, do we have a Giannis? Do we have an Embiid? I don't know if we do. And that's before getting into, again, Lonzo. It's just that just sucks from a basketball context and from a personal context. That just sucks what's been going on with his knee and stuff. But you kind of zoom out. Okay, do we have like the top tier or do we just have a really good group? And then you kind of go from there. And so that's where I kind of lean like, okay, I don't know if this is going to get you into the Boston class, the Milwaukee class. Versus with Denver, it was like, okay, we know we got an MVP. That we can build this out around. We also know we have a all-star caliber guard that has played with him and that tandem is unstoppable. It's up to us to find the supplementary pieces now. but we believe in this too. And so I think kind of reading where you are and reading the general landscape is where you kind of decide, is it worth ejecting early? And to the Clippers portion, they're in a tougher spot because, again, Kawhi, PG, and Russ, and also Harden can hit the market this summer. And so you need to know, you kind of have to start, you know, send them to the Denver thing. Okay, what has Kawhi and Paul George done for us? Do we believe in this group enough that we can win a title? And so far, it's what, a Western Conference Finals appearance and shorter appearances from there? Injuries, obvious context to add there, but that's kind of been as what is them. From there, you make your decision. Okay, have we done enough there? Okay, what does this two look like with Russ? Those minutes have been positive. And then evaluating, okay, what does Harden look like? Then you zoom out the landscape. How do we match up with Denver? Do we trust whatever the healthy version of Phoenix is going to end up being? Because KD's still there. We haven't seen Devin Booker since the opener. We haven't seen Bradley Beal yet. You're surveying the landscape from there. And then Eastern Conference. Okay, if we can make it through this gauntlet, how do we match up with Boston now? And if we're giving out 3-year contracts with a player option or whatever the case may be, how do we match up against what Boston is and can continue to be with the younger teams in the West? Okay, how do we compare with OKC 3 years from now, et cetera? And that's where you can kind of decide, is it worth committing to this if we hit the All-Star break and this is a 500 group? Are they really going to turn this around to the degree to where we can win? And if not, do we want to commit or do we want to try to salvage this thing and then enter, you know, next season, season after that, into the new arena, all that good stuff? That's kind of how I would approach it.
I like it. I will add the curveball. Championship windows are not guaranteed these days.
That's true.
And while you can keep your players, you can extend them, you can pay them, that does not mean they are going to want to stay there. And so you have to calculate, how good are we? Are we keeping this person in a place where they want to stay here? Can we merge both of these timelines? Because if you start assuming, now, okay, we got this player for this long, we can do this, go ahead and have a couple bad years.
Get that text. Hey, man, we need to talk.
The text? Somebody's going to send you a social media clip on a podcast. And now you got to sit and try and figure out, can we get Damian Lillard? You think?
In comes Carl Anthony Towns. You are a Los Angeles Clipper. Like, oh, how did this happen? But yeah, that's going to... Some tough decisions upcoming for the Los Angeles Clippers, regardless of how the season goes. So, again, I like the question. That's good stuff. To the general mailbag. This is going to come from JP, who says, hello, quick coach question. I'm going to defer to Steve. I'm 33 now, and I understand how players age out of their physical prime. But at what point do players age out of their peak ability to learn new skills? You know, an old dog can't learn new tricks and all that. But what's stopping a 12-year vet from learning a skyhook?
Nikias used the semantics that the word said coach.
Hey,
Even though we've coached him the same amount of games in the last 6 years, but it's fine.
What about before that, though?
I think for me, it's less about their peak ability to learn new skills and more about just the context. Like, player development obviously becomes less of a priority as you're a proven and established player. With aging players, I think it becomes more about context and role. And have you developed your game to a point where if things change, you can change with them? A lot of these guys can still play. The question is, what do these teams need from them? Mm-hmm. Is what you're doing going to be more of a plus than what we could get from this player that we could keep for the next 4 years and boost up? Can you adjust to doing just these specific things that we need from you on this team? Can you nail these things that's going to allow you to stay on the court for us? Can you avoid the slippage in certain areas that will allow you to stay on the court? Like, if this part of your game is fine and good and it's still great, but the other half is slipping, how much value is really there? Can we justify the role that we're giving you as opposed to insert younger player here or, you know what I mean? Like, I look at Paul Millsap. There's no disrespect to Paul Millsap, had a great career. Once the switching kind of came off the board a little bit and the defense kind of faded a little bit, and the three-point shooting that he found in Denver faded a little bit, it just looked different. It wasn't nothing he did. He put himself in the position to keep playing by, hey, I can defend, I can shoot, I can play 4 and 5, we good. And then once that stopped, it was like, all right, thank you.
We appreciate you, big dog.
So, I mean, it's just about, can you continue to develop that game? Like, I look at DeMar DeRozan, he can mid-range all day. So as long as the defense can stay at a certain level and the shot-making stays at a certain level, he can play as long as he wanted to. Klay Thompson is going to have the opportunity to play as long as he wants to because he can shoot. That's going to have value. Chris Paul knows exactly what he can do. He knows exactly what he can't do. And you know what he doesn't do? The things he can't do. But we've seen this cycle. We've seen it with Melo, with Boogie, LaMarcus, Westbrook, Rose, Griffin. It's not that they can't play. It's just, can you? It's not that they have to learn something new. It's, can they now take what they do and put it in a very specific box? Like, look at Al Horford. Did Al Horford gain a new skill? Did he learn a new skill? Or did he gain an understanding of, oh, this is what's going to keep me around. This is what's going to allow me to help impact winning and continue to compete. I can defend. I can switch. I knock down shots. Everything else is a bonus, right? Look at Jeff Green.
Still cooking.
Jeff Green's still here. You know when he shot his career best from three?
When?
Age 34 in Brooklyn, 41%. Did he learn how to shoot or did the context help him? Look at Kevin Love. Man looked like he wanted to throw everything at everyone in Cleveland. No disrespect, K-Love.
Now he's throwing full court outlets.
Full court outlet passes. It looks different in Miami. Did he learn a new skill or was it a different context for a team that needs what he does?
Wise words from Steve Jones Jr. That's good stuff. That's good stuff. Next one is going to come from Joe. Says, hi, Steve and Nikias. I'm trying to force myself into reading and writing more often than I have the past few years.
Go, Joe!
There you go. I figured the best way to do that would be by selecting a couple of NBA games a week to watch live or the next day and jot out notes throughout the entirety of the game.
Okay.
Currently watching Hawks at Bucks right now and was surprised to see a lineup with Clint Capella and Onyeka Okongwu in together, as I didn't think they shared the court last season for any real amount of time. Immediately looked up the two-man lineup data for them last year, and they played a combined 5 minutes on the court together last year in three games. Is there any lineup configuration for this Hawks team where you think that they could have continued success with both on the floor for extended stretches? Also, if you have any advice or resources for someone trying to be better at immediately recognizing offensive and defensive sets being run during games, it would be appreciated. First, thank you, Joe. To your second, well, I'll go quickly, so I'll let you rock. To having Capella and Onyeka on the floor together, like, my mind immediately goes to, like, Trey, AJ, Bogdan on the floor to really maximize the spacing around those two, especially since Onyeka can do so many hub things. You can kind of get away with, like, Clint Capella roaming the dunker spot area on either side, and if you just maximize the spacing there, I think that's probably your best bet. Because I'll leave it there. Steve, what say you?
Well, number one, I want to give you a shout, Joe. One, keep doing what you're doing. Keep taking those notes. Two, you actually did what Nikias has asked for years, where he says, if you're just watching basketball and you have a question, just go ahead and email it. So salute to you for doing that. Bonus points. Nikias has been begging that for 2 years. Thank you. I was excited. Like, I think two big lineups are a thing. You just need two bigs whose skill set complement each other. Problem for me with these two in particular, Capella and Okongwu, what do you run? Where do you space? Is this just John Collins and Clint Capella, but it tastes funnier? Like, I went to Basketball Reference, and I believe these two, for their careers, unless my math was not mathing this morning, have taken a total of 23 threes ever. And I think two of Okongwu's three three-point attempts came in that Milwaukee game, where I believe they played a two-minute stretch. So it's interesting. I do think more offenses are going to or are taking a note out of the Golden State book, the Miami book, whoever else I need to credit that I forgot about, and spacing their non-shooting big out past the three and using them as a safety valve. And so, hey, I know I'm coming off the screen. I know that kick is going to be there because the help is off. Let's swing it there. And now you can do some pretty cool stuff. If it's a skip pass and a Trae Young cutting off or doing things, just kind of depends on how you want to work it. I don't see a ton of it for Atlanta, unless it's just a matchup where you think Clint Capella can guard wing X, like a Giannis or a Siakam or someone like that, where it's like, nah, Clint, you do the Clint thing. Let's not have this happen. Especially with the way Jalen Johnson's played and Sadiq Bey, the way they want to play with shooting out there. Lineup-wise, I think you'd need Trey. I would want Bogdanović out there as well. for his ability to handle the ball and also get some pull-ups. I would go DeAndre Hunter, this version of DeAndre Hunter. Mm-hmm. The one that just shoots and makes.
It's helpful. Oh, Jesus. In terms of resources for like play names, like first and foremost, start with the dunker spot, follow Steve. The threats are tremendous. Also, he'll sprinkle in the play names every now and then for when he was, you know, working in the league, you know, someone that had some experience here. Respect that, man. So start with Steve. I try my best, but I also just ask Steve a lot. So better to go straight to the source than to me. Start there. Other than that, like, honestly, I find like more and more people are just doing it on the YouTube side now. So like that's been a fun part of growth, just general basketball media, where it feels like more people are trying to tap into the X's and O's side of things. That is fun. That is the growth that I want to see. And some of the things I was complaining about not seeing before this podcast started. So it's been cool to see that. So I would say if you are on Twitter, and I would imagine you are if you saw the email prompt, I'd say the account Bowser2Bowser is pretty good with a whole bunch of play names and stuff. If you were trying to get that specific bag, Half Court Hoops is a good resource. See if there are some other ones off the top of my head for play names. So there are a lot of people doing film, but like play names specifically.
Hey, while you're thinking, you want to know the best resource for play names and play calls?
What's up?
Turn the volume up. You'll just hear it. You'll just hear it. And I don't mean this disrespectfully. This is my PSA. Understand the concepts. Those are more important than the play call because there are 8 million ways to call the same action, the same thing. So don't get hung up on that because there are some things that are staples. There are some things that have different meanings. Someone's horns might be two up. Someone's two side might be a loop to an Iverson cut, but two side might also mean two screeners screening on the side. Swing backside might be different than split backside. Don't get me started on Zoom action. I don't know why y'all did that. Got this influx of people just naming things what it is, but we'll save that rant for a different day. Everyone likes to call it Spain pick and roll. Guess what they call it in the league? Stack pick and roll. So don't get caught up in the offensive play call. It was more important for you to know why they are doing it, what they are trying to accomplish. That would be my thing to you. You want to know about defense? You can listen there. You're going to hear it. You watch coach red 1 through 5, black 1 through 4. It's typically going to be a color or a temperature. Now you just got to mix and match. But you have to know what they're trying to accomplish before you can just know, okay, well, they're in a red right now. Well, what's that mean? There you go. It's my rant.
There you go. That's good stuff with a rant sprinkled in. Shout out to Steve. You'd love to see it. Okay. We got one from Connor, who says, hey, Nikai and Steve, third time caller and day one listener of the pod here. We like that. I'm a Cavs fan, but have always been curious about Jalen Suggs because I thought they'd be in position to draft him instead of Mobley back in 2021. Currently watching Lakers Magic. He's been an absolute menace defensively all game, and he's shown some stuff offensively here and there, a few nice timely cuts in particular. But just curious what growth you'd like to see from him on that end of the floor, perhaps setting aside the jumper, which feels obvious, but certainly can be a part of it. More broadly, what do you think the most likely outcome is for his career? All-star, high-end starter, complimentary second or third guard? Do you see it happening on Orlando or somewhere else, giving the glut of guards? Thanks, and keep up the awesome work. Thank you for that. Steve, your Jalen Suggs thoughts right now.
You didn't want to tape that one?
Oh, I mean, I got Jalen Suggs thoughts.
I know, that's why. Okay, that's fine. the jumper is the one for me. And that's mainly to get him to his maximum impact. I think he's got confidence. At least he's shown the confidence with some of the shots he's attempted to take. But he's going to have to be able to up the catch and shoot makes. I don't think it's a skill issue with Jalen Suggs. I think he can be an impactful basketball player, even if the shot's lagging behind. If he wants to hit the peak or really make this thing move, it's got to go up. Like, I think I went to NBA.com. Their tracking data has him shooting 31.3% from three on catch and shoots. And he was at 34.8 last year. And he was at 22.2% in his rookie year. And so he's going to need to bring that to the table. And now you can mix in your skill and drive some of those closeouts or run pick and roll and have the option to pull up. So now when you have the ball in your hands, we know you can make play A, B, and C. And if not, you can score. Or if you're off ball, yes, the cutting's great. Good shout there. Yes, the driving's great, but what can you do? Can you make a defense pay? And I think for him to make a defense pay, that shot has to go up.
Got you. I think just to bounce off of that, like, I don't want to be super adult with the jumper with Jalen. You already hit on the numbers, so I won't hang here too long. But I do think since he isn't more, like, he is more, like, it's a comp that I've seen and I can see. Like, I think the Marcus Smart comps for him come from, like, the defense because he's a dog on that end. But also offensively, in which he can run and initiate some offense for you, but he's not your quote-unquote traditional point guard. Like, he's not your run 45, 50 ball screens a game type of dude. He's going to be at his best attacking tilted defenses. And the defenses will be more tilted. He will get more aggressive closeouts if the jumper is better. Because off the ball, like, he's already, like, and I guess that's what's encouraging for me. He's already a good off-ball mover. Like, you mentioned the cutting, but also just staying within a driver's line of sight, relocating, baseline drifts and stuff like that. Like, he already seems to have that kind of thing. We saw that in college for him. It's just going to be, as reductive as it is, knocking down enough shots for it to matter. Because if he does that, he's going to be really darn good. But he's just below the efficiency threshold right now. As far as, like I think high-end starters where he can get, I don't know if he becomes a good enough creator for himself to really hit all-star level. Or at the very least, like, I think he would end up just being, like, a coach's pick for an all-star. Like, I don't see, like, 23, 5, and 6 for Jalen Suggs, in which those numbers are what make the fans vote for him. He's in as an all-star starter. Like, I think high-end would probably be, like, 18, 5, and 5 for him with all defense-caliber defense. And the coaches are like, yeah, that guy, he's doing good things for Orlando.
So you're saying his ceiling is Dylan Brooks?
No. I we started with Marcus Smart. No.
What you mean?
No.
What you mean? No.
No, I'm not letting you do this to me.
Hey, hold on. I'm not letting you get off that. He averaged 18 in Memphis.
Was it 18, 5, and 5?
It was 18, 2, and 3.
All right, that okay. Case closed.
All court defense consideration. I'm just saying.
No. Anyway, we'll get into a couple of more before we close this out. It's going to come from Daniel, who says, hello, Nikias and Steve. Hope you are doing well. Thank you. This is definitely going to be long-winded, so I apologize. We are the dunker spot. We're fine. I am just reaching out with regards to the workload and development of Jaden McDaniels. As someone who also has a lot of stock, for both fantasy and all honesty, Nikias influence purposes. Yes, I did it. And what can he do and what he can do and what was shown after seeing the extension? I have questions. I do wonder what the diet looks like for McDaniels offensively going forward. With that being said, my questions are, what one or two main actions or skills would you look to empower him with as somebody who has shown potential out of college offensively where he has now flipped it to the defense? How does he become more of a hub on offense? To me, I wonder how they can use him as a screener for Cat in non-Ant lineups. I feel there's just more that can be tapped into as he shot 38.6% on catch and shoot threes, according to NBA.com. So now I wonder how he can turn that into being a two-level scorer before it gets to three. So first, thank you for the question. I'm also glad that the Jaden McDaniels propaganda has reached at least one person. We love to see it. As far as the diet for him, it's going to be hard to up the usage for him right now, just in terms of him having the ball in his hands, because you have Anthony Edwards. And even with his use as a screener, and I'm glad you brought up, like, the non-Anthony Edwards lineups, even the usage of him as a screener, because, like, what big is he going to be playing alongside? Because I think as a coach, you're like, okay, Jaden can screen, and we can probably get some funky stuff out of that. Why is he screening if we have, like, Naz Reid on the court? Or if we have Cat on the court? Or if we have Rudy Gobert on the court? Where you could probably just get more juice, or at the very least involve a big and remove them from the paint. And then maybe that opens up a swing to Jaden McDaniels so he can get downhill. Because I think a lot of the fun with me last year, shot well from three, but as we saw post-All-Star break for him, he got a lot more comfortable driving the basketball. We saw Euro step after Euro step after Euro step after Euro step. And it's like, okay, this is cool. He's shooting well. The closeouts aren't super consistently aggressive, but they are getting progressively more aggressive because he's knocking down those shots and he's taking them within rhythm. And now he's leveraging that into driving opportunities. And so more than anything, I guess it's just trusting him a little bit more on second side stuff. With the defenses tilting more, trusting him to get downhill more and kind of building off of that. Like, I don't know how many pick and rolls I want to initiate with him. But I think even with him and Cat, like, I think it's going to be a switch probably.
And I think depending on who they're facing, their teams are probably still going to be comfortable either switching a pick and roll with him and Rudy, or at least it's going to be a deep drop. And like, he's gotten more comfortable taking those pull-up twos, but that's not, you know, I trust the drives more than the pull-up two, if that makes sense. So I don't know how varied the usage can get with him yet. I think as the handle continues to tighten and as he continues to shoot well from deep, that may open up more things for him. But I'm kind of fine with where he is usage-wise right now. Thus concludes my JD McDaniels spiel. Steve, where are you at on J-Mac?
I actually thought one of the big benefits of that trade for Mike Conley was to free up some usage for Jaden McDaniels. And I think to give him, we saw him get some more room to work with offensively. For me, it's just about using his versatility within the offense. Let him come off some pin downs, let him come off some screens, see if he can turn the corner, use that size and ability to like cut to his advantage, mix in some pick and rolls or handoffs with him, let him drive off some kickouts and pick and roll, use him as a screener. I think is something you can do, especially if teams want to stash someone on him at some point in time, or you can kind of get a switch and now he becomes a screener for Ant, something like that. I think the only thing I might have, it's a tricky spot with McDaniels, and I hope it doesn't happen. You want the shot to improve. I don't want him to just become a catch and shoot guy or a catch and now I drive and get to a pull-up guy because of how defenses are treating him or how the context may be shifting in Minnesota. I think you lose some of what he brings to the table if that's what he becomes. It's not to say a bad thing. It's looked smooth as far as getting to some of these shots this year. It's limited action. But I would like him to continue to be that aggressive guy who can just be versatile and give Minnesota that we have multiple playmakers, we have movement, we can really put pressure on you.
There we go. And our last one, we got a watch party question to close this one out. From Zo Zizzle.
Big Zizzle.
Not the little one. All right. Says, hi, Steve and Dekaius. Been a fan for a few months now. Your content has improved my basketball knowledge tenfold. I'm writing this in the playback before Sixers Bucks. Steve is currently doing his intro.
Yeah, so much to listen to the intro. Wow. Well, we're doing some multitasking. All right.
There's been a lot of hype around the freak time pick and roll as Dame and Giannis' skill sets theoretically complement each other perfectly and potentially create an all-time pick and roll duo. My question is, if you could pair any two players in NBA history to run the most dominant pick and rolls ever, who would you pick? I think Steph and Shaq would be brutally unfair. Thank you for all you do and looking forward to more shenanigans. Which is where I note the shenanigans that I mentioned in the outro are for signing up for playback, as it is free, no shenanigans. I am not, once you're in there, I can't speak for what may pop up in the comment section. But, Steve, your pick and roll duo.
I had a lot of duos in my head. I almost went down a rabbit hole. But I stopped myself because in my head, like, Shaq and Curry is tough to beat.
Yeah.
And then once, like, that's hard to match. So then I was like, okay, what do I do now? And I tried to beat that and I got myself in a weird place because I was like, ooh, this would be really tough. But then in my head, I was like, you could just switch these two. Like, I landed on and through a bunch of results, which involved like Charles Barkley and Michael Jordan and LeBron. I went wild. I was like, okay, Luka Jokic. That's got to be the one, right? And then I was like, well, yeah, but then teams could just switch it. I mean, you wouldn't, might not like the results, but they might just be like, we're not dealing with that. Switch, cook, you know what I mean? And now is it really a pick and roll duo? So I got in my head about that. So I flipped it to Curry and Jokic. Mainly based on the fact that you can invert that one. And that's where I was like, well, Steph's a really good screener. Jokic's downhill. You're not going to want to switch. That doesn't seem fun. Also seems disrespectful to Jamal Murray since he's, like, actually there. So,
hey, y'all was, good and all, but hey, that dude you face three times a year?
But then I was like, hey, this is disrespectful to Tim Duncan. And I was like, prime Chris Paul? And I was like, ah, that'd be
the
tough.
Wake Forest could.
And then I was like, I thought about LeBron. Because you could invert it. And then my mind went right back to Steph Curry. Because I'm like, well, you're not going to want to switch that. And when LeBron has a screener that can pop, it's really, really not fun. And then I was like, well, I'm kind of just shoving away what Kyrie did. So I don't know. I mean, there's an answer, but nah, I ain't ever picking them.
Okay. Absolutely not. God, glad you left them on red. I think it's hard to beat Steph and Shaq for sure. I went with LeBron and Steph, inverted pick and roll.
There we go.
I was going to have an inverted action. I was also like, if we put 07-08 Chris Paul with like Jokic, what you doing? Or if we put that Chris Paul with like Dirk, what are you doing? But then it's like, man, LeBron is just a supercomputer, and then it's Steph, and you can't switch that. I mean, you could, but like you're not gonna feel good about it. You try to bring help from anywhere else, it's just LeBron seeing over the top of the defense. If Steph is just go like one, Steph is just a really good screener in his own right. So it ain't even like the here's the go screen. If we prepare ourselves early, we can kind of match up, whatever. Like Steph will legitimately hit you. And then not only can he flare out after the screen, like he can flare out to 30 if he wants. He can just play with the angles in which he comes off the screen. So you can't really get a beat on him. And he's so good at shooting off platform. He doesn't have to square up. He can just catch, turn. You just don't know what to do. It's Steph screening for LeBron for me.
It's probably, the answer is probably like Magic and Prime Amari.
Oh, no. Nah, you run on the left side of the floor. You just ice it with Magic. And then you, anyway.
Do you have free throws?
I do not. Do you?
I do have a few, man. Let's get you out of there. Bigger power play. Popping up at practice unannounced or pulling up to the airport unannounced?
Power play is probably the airport.
Okay.
Now I'm here, and I'm like, no, you ain't. Like, oh.
All right, now guys, so if Usher serenades your little friend at any point in life, how do you feel?
Oh, Lord. happy for her. You know, living out a dream. Asia was just on the moon. Good for her. Good for her. It's good for the Aces. Like, it's been fun just watching the outpouring of love. They're just getting Asia all over TV. We got Sid Colson writing feature stories on Asia, Alicia Clark in the Players Tribune. Like, it's just been a lot of fun. Congratulations to Chelsea Gray and her wife. They're expecting now. Like, it's just all good vibes with the members of the Aces right now. But yeah, if theoretical little friend got the, like, it's, ideally, I'm not with anyone that I can't trust. So, like, that's just have fun. Like, I'm not super tripping on that.
I got you. Judging by Instagram captions, does Marcus Morris know he was traded or did he think he signed there?
Can the answer just be yes?
That's fine.
I think he just saw Philly and is like, bet.
Did Nick Batum handle the fourth quarter joke as well as he could?
Yes. A+. That is how you do it. That is how you do it. You don't get salty. Like, it's either you lean into the bit or you just ignore it. Because if you appear any sort of salty, no matter how justified it may be, if you appear salty, you're just going to lose public opinion. You're just going to lose. Now, how much public opinion matters to you, that varies per person. So fine. That context changes. But in general, he leaned into the bit. That's funny. That's good stuff.
All right. More on brand, I don't know, bro. Giannis, when he was asked what OG did to bother him, or Russell Westbrook when asked what it would take to get these four working together?
More on brand is Russ.
Okay.
Can I just very quickly on that?
What's up?
My media pals.
Oh, God.
I understand, especially if you're on like a specific team beat, I understand that the rules are a little bit different. But in a vacuum, if you are asking questions to a player who just lost the game, asking about things unrelated to the basketball game, especially which a thing that may affect his minutes and role moving forward, you're probably not going to get a good answer. That is very much going to be like, let me catch you at practice. Let me catch you at shoot around before you get going. The question itself is not bad. It is a good one. It is a valid one. I'm not questioning what the actual question was. Asking that after a loss, you are going to get that answer versus actual, well, you know, we got to work together, see where guys want to be, what their spots are, how they like to play off each other. You know, I have experience with James already, so it shouldn't be that much of an adjustment period, but it's going to be a new group. You know, we're going to have the good days, the bad days, etc. So you're not going to get all that after a loss. I'm sorry. Just try to increase your odds when you are in these situations. That's all I got.
Okay. Bigger reason for the Warriors turnaround, Chris Paul or Draymond being happy to be at work again?
It's Chris, but I am cracking up at, yeah, the chemistry just sucked. We didn't like being here. And it's just like, everybody's just kind of waiting on him to do the thing, and it just never happened. It's like, yeah, man, now you can see we happy together. And it's like, yeah, but, So I got a good laugh at that when I saw that this morning on the old The Expert app, I guess. I don't know.
More sick. Kings fans with the Warriors, Pistons fans with their spacing, or Heat fans as a concept?
It's probably Heat fans as a concept with Kings fans and the Warriors probably a close second.
Okay.
I think Detroit is a mix of this spacing absolutely sucks, and holy crap, Cade Cunningham is awesome. So I think they kind of offset some stuff. The Kings, they just got to be sick. And again, I have a very long history with Heat fans, Heat Twitter, et cetera. They win. They win. I might just be too close to it, but they win.
Okay. What's more true, Daniel Tice's anger with not playing or Yuta Watanabe's joy of being with Kevin Durant?
That's such a deep cut. That's a dunker spot free throw if I ever heard it. Yeah. Hey, man, Daniel Tice know he can hoop. Y'all see these seals I'm setting? No, but no. It's got to be. Probably Daniel Tice.
Who's going to be the first to go, hey, man, in Milwaukee? Giannis, Dame, or Bobby Portis?
It's 10,000% Bobby Portis.
Don't sleep on the odds for Jay Crowder. And the final one, what is wilder? What LeBron James is doing in this season, or the fact that Nick Young dressed up as his own self in meme form for Halloween?
It's the latter with the added note, shout out to Lexi Brown. The man ain't even matched the white tee. Brother, you had the easiest. You went to Halloween as yourself. And you ain't have a white tee to put on? How you gonna have on your own costume as yourself? There's bare minimum, and then there's that. Like, you should just treat it as October 31st. That was gonna be the bit. That ain't Halloween. How you do that? It's Nick Young. I'm sorry. You can't do that. Anyway. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. And if you are a YouTube watcher, if you prefer that as your medium, we are on JJ Redick's YouTube channel every Tuesday. Tuesdays are for the dunkers. So if you want video form, check out our latest episode, which we gave our opening weekend takes. Same brand of basketball analysis. We also have some plays sprinkled in there. So we got some live examples as the words are flowing. So that's going to be fun. We'll be back next Tuesday and every following Tuesday. So subscribe to JJ Redick's YouTube channel if you have not already. You can follow me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter. We're having fun discussions in there. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties. If you have a League Pass subscription, enter your information. It is free. No shenanigans. The link to the room is going to be hyperlinked in your podcast description. You can click on that. Enter your information. Your League Pass login. It is free. No shenanigans. If not, copy and paste the link into your browser. Sign up. Once again, it is free. No shenanigans. You can watch games with us. It's on screen for you. In general, it is a very fun and inclusive community. So you can just kind of let your hair down. Come chop it up with us. We have people up on stage asking random questions or ranting about their days. It's a lot of fun. As for the basketball portion, again, live analysis. We're breaking down plays during timeouts. It's the whole shebang. Come rock with us. It is a ton of fun. But with that, we will catch y'all next week.
Hey, great job, Nikias. So Christian Wood, huh?